Hi, I'm Charlie, and this is Stereo Hysteria. Our June Artist of the Month is Robbie Foulkes, who has been releasing music as a solo artist for close to 20 years that showcases his excellent guitar playing and masterful songwriting, which can range from bluegrass to honky-tonk to power pop. He cut his teeth in Nashville, but he's called Chicago his home for 30 years, where his mixture of classic country technique and a slightly twisted sense of humor earned him a place within the city's Americana and alt-country communities. He's a frequent and fearless performer whose weekly residency at Chicago's Hideout highlights his versatility and knack for interpreting others' songs, most recently with full-length tributes to Cheap Trick and Bob Dylan and the Band. It was upstairs at the Hideout where Stereo Hysteria caught up with Robbie for a chat about his career to date, and we'll be hearing that conversation throughout. Right now we're hearing an instrumental piece of music that preceded the song Night Accident on Robbie's third album, 1999's Let's Kill Saturday Night. But we'll start things off with the first song on his debut album, 1996's Country Love Songs on Bloodshot Records, called Every Kind of Music But Country.
Well, I've been hounding her for such a long time, trying to impress her with my hillbilly wine. But she told me I was barking up the wrong tree. She liked every kind of music but country. Every kind of music but country. She liked it fast, she liked it loud, she liked it funky. She liked everything about me except for one thing. She liked every kind of music but country. Well, I thought I had a big one on the line. She said listening to music was her favorite pastime. But she told me I was trying to swim upstream. She liked every kind of music but country. Every kind of music but country. She liked it fast, she liked it loud, she liked it funky. She liked everything about me except for one thing. She liked every kind of music but country.
It's going good, Charlie.
Great show.
Well, thank you. I won't dispute, but okay.
We're talking from the upstairs of the Hideout, which is one of my favorite clubs in Chicago. And it's one where you play a different set nearly every Monday night.
Right, right.
When did that start?
2010, January 2010. And yeah, it's 2014 now, so I guess we're in our fifth year. Is that right?
Yeah.
In the fifth year, yeah. Yeah, every week's a different thing, and it's either, like tonight, somebody, a friend passing through town, you know, that can stay over for a Monday, or it's a friend in town that I would seldom get to work with, you know, if not for this. Or it's sometimes it's a cute theme, you know, the music of a particular group or something, or a verbal pun extended into a musical show. So it's always different. It's always a good time.
It seems like there's an improvisational element, but there's always a bit of planning as well.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there has to be planning for it to be a watchable show generally, and there has to be improv because that's the nature of the thing. Like,
right.
It's never, like, you know, it's never can be 100% like a show, you know, it
right.
can't be really like a scripted, prepared, rehearsed. The rehearsal is, you know, an hour or two before we do it, and tonight it was not even that by half. So, you know, Phil's personality, I've played with Phil Lee tonight, and he's, I think nuts is the word for what he is, and we slotted out a little place to practice the songs, but we didn't really practice. He said strange things, and we played a few chords from each of the songs, and then he pulled out new songs that I'd never heard before, and yeah, it was City of Your Pants, but that's cool. I mean, that's what you're supposed to be able to do when you're a musician, as you know, so
right.
it keeps the muscles in order.
being in a room where something is happening that has never happened before and probably will never happen again is
hopefully it's fun exciting. For people. Was that what you were going to say or what were you going to say?
Yeah, that's the gist of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the essence to me of music and of theater. I know a lot of like modern music has moved, or modern popular music has moved in a direction away from that idea, I think, but I'm not making an old guy complaint, but I like music that's performed and in the moment and has that sort of jazz ideal to it, if that's the proper term. So that's what I do.
Up next, we'll hear a song from Robbie's most recent album, Last Year's Gone Away Backward, recorded live and acoustically at Steve Albini's Electrical Audio Studio in Chicago, called Sometimes the Grass is Really Greener.
Dusty shack high in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It was tough work, brown dirt, and bluegrass songs. Sweet hickory filled the air. Daddy's love was hard but fair. If I knew how rich I was, I'd not have gone. Oh, but the city called my name and I came running with my young man's hopes and my daddy's old guitar. I played the dives and paid some dues, singing every tune I knew, and them homesick ones I sang the best by far. Now I've seen the sun go down on the streets of New York town, and I've watched it from the hills of old Virginia. Beauty's what the eye beholds, one man's dirt's another's gold. Oh, but sometimes the grass is really greener. Company man confessed he liked me. Oh, but he'd have to shave a few rough edges down. Cut my hair like Brooks and Dunn's. Trade the banjo for some drums, 'cause no one would buy that old high lonesome sound. Now I don't know just what this deal's got me. I gained not a fan and I lost the ones I had. I've worn my heart right through my sleeve, singing a song I don't believe. I believe I'll go back home to Mom and Dad. Now I've seen the sun go down on the streets of New York town, and I've watched it from the hills of old Virginia. Beauty's what the eye beholds, one man's dirt's another's gold. Oh, but sometimes the grass is really greener. Shack high in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and when I die, it's on this farm they'll lay me down. And the hills will hear my song, 'cause it's there that I belong. Man, you just can't shake old roots from southern ground. Now I've seen the sun go down on the streets of New York town, and I've watched it from the hills of old Virginia. Beauty's what the eye beholds, one man's dirt's another's gold. Oh, but sometimes the grass is really greener.
Your latest album, Gone Away Backward, kind of takes that to heart. It's all live performances. A lot of the songs do have that sort of retrospective feeling to them. I don't want to ask, are your songs autobiographical, but is there an element of reflection?
Yeah, of personal reflection? Yeah, I think so. I think increasingly, you know, and on that record, I indulged in it more. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done, I think, 12 records, and for the first, you know, 10 or 11, or I don't know, till 2007 or something, I kind of shifted gears a little bit in 2007, 2008, around then, and I started playing more acoustically, and I started, I don't know, trying to write a different kind of song that was more in line with who I was then. It seems like for a long time, for the 15 years previous, I was stringing out an idea that I had in the early 90s or something about taking the Buck Owens idea and making it into my personality somehow, and among other things. But as a middle-aged guy, and as a guy that was getting more just enjoyment out of playing acoustic guitar and a mic, you know, I started doing that more, and I started thinking, man, this is really where it's at, like making the air move and playing in small groups and having everybody listen to it rather than beating people over the head with noise. That just hit home in a special way. And so, like, doing this music, which is, as you say, a little bit more autobiographical, you know, just braids in personal memories and anecdote and scattered memories into the storyline, whatever it happens to be, feels good from a middle-aged perspective. You know, when you cross that line, when you tend to have more to look back on than to look forward to,
right,
it feels natural.
Here's another track from Gone Away Backward called Long I Ride.
It's ragrass in the wintertime, flowers in the spring, but Texas in the summer is now suffering. I went up on Jackson Hill at a diner, I sat down, and I waved at every stranger just to move the air around. It's long to ride for the little I gain. Silk brocade in her bedroom and a job to pay for two. I think I'll get down the old guitar and see what I may find. Get a dollar off some lawyer on the number 7 line. It's a long ride for a little I gain. Six string on your shoulder could be the devil's brand. They'll put themselves above you, but for all the stud and brag, I'd trade every brick on Wall Street for one black mountain rag. It's a long to ride for the little I gain.
When did you first start playing music? Did you come from a musical family?
Yeah, my parents played. Yeah, I guess just about everybody in my family played. My brother plays violin, and granddad played saxophone, and nobody really played country music per se. I think I was the first, and my dad was a big admirer of Doc Watson, and he spent a lot of hours trying to flat pick in that style, and I don't think he would dispute, you know, the idea that conveyed by the word trying, you know, he spent a lot of frustrated hours. He was a good finger picker, and he was good at a lot of things, but that kind of fiddle tune flat picking thing is the little was the edge of that that I fastened onto. And anyway, it enchanted both of us, but for whatever reason it turned out to be more my natural voice than his. So being introduced to Doc at an early age, and Earl Scruggs and John Hartford and John Duffy and all these people. This is when I was, I don't know, 4 years old till 10 or 11 when I started like branching out and like finding my own things which were different from that, from my parents' taste. That was totally formative. And that's stuff that I'm calling on a lot now in the middle years, stuff that's like the earliest stuff that I was playing and loving and listening to.
When you started your professional music career, you were, for a long time, you played with a band called Special
Consensus.
Consensus. And it seemed during your tenure in the band, they were very successful. They got nominated for a Grammy. What did you learn from that experience?
Well, I was with them for 2.5 years, and I'll tell you exactly what I learned. I learned how to be on the road. And at the time, I was young. I was in my 20s. And to get in a working band when you're 20, whatever, I was 25 years old, and to figure out how to do that, you know, how not to bang your head against the wall every night and stay up and go crazy every night. I mean, I guess I did a lot of that and still do some of that. But people die, you know. I mean, it's like it's easy to, like, you know, just wreck your brain and to hurt yourself and to party too hard and to just throw yourself into it in the wrong way. So I don't know. I think there's a rhythm that you can find after you've done it for a couple years as a job, you know, just night after night, and finding the rhythm of getting up in the morning, husbanding your energy through lunch, through a 6-hour drive, through a sound check, and then delivering the best that you've got at 10 at night or whatever. It might sound romantic and it might sound easy compared to working in a coal mine, and I'm sure it is. But there's kind of a trick to it, and that you have to do it for a while to get it. So that's what that band mainly gave to me, and also the chance to get my guitar chops much, much better. Like within the first 6 months of being in that band, I went from 2 on the scale of 1 to 10 to 6, you know. If 10 is really, really good, I didn't get there, but I shot up a lot. And then when I left the band, those, my skills kind of atrophied, you know. It's like use it or lose it, but you get good playing every night. You just, right, there's nothing like playing every night for an audience. You can do it at home and get, you know, somewhere with it, but you can't get as far as playing for people for some reason that I don't quite understand. I guess the intensity of it,
right? You're putting in your Malcolm Gladwell hours.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But again, I don't know if the 10,000-hour rule, you know, what part of that encompasses performance in front of people. But performance in front of people is really essential to getting good, I think. That's what I've found.
We'll continue with the title track from Robbie's 2005 album, Georgia Heart.
She said she was leaving, so I went to follow. Blind love and I-55 got me here. Dirty old salt truck in the smog before me, and dear old Dixie back in the rearview mirror. Got a third story walk up with a view of the alley, a bail room job that isn't all glamour. Gone to another, and now my feet are just too planted to run. And there's no Carolina moon over Chicago, no bluegrass growing out in my backyard, no fields of sugar cane, no soft. Sad song. I guess some things are the same most everywhere. Day. Mr. Conwell, could you accept the charges? When I told you a cold day and thinking I lied, and if your pecan trees still need a shaking, well, I'll be back begging fast as the gray dawn flies. 'Cause there's no Carolina moon over Chicago.
Start songwriting?
Oh, when I was 10, and I wrote lousy songs until last year. A long, long time. Yeah, when I was about 10.
You went to Nashville for a while to do the writing for hire thing, mm-hmm. and quite a few of your songs have been sort of disillusioned with Nashville after you quit doing that.
Well, I worked for a publisher for, 4 years. And in certain ways, it was really great. It was a weekly paycheck, and it was a chance to, you know, write songs for a semi-living. It didn't quite cover my expenses, but that and performance and teaching together did. And it was exciting just getting a foot in that world and meeting people and getting to co-write with people that I admired and play with people that I admired. The job was, like, theoretically, to write stuff that other people would want to record.
Right.
So probably half of the, I don't know, 200 songs or whatever that I wrote during those years, probably half of them were aimed at somebody like Reba McEntire mm-hmm. or Garth Brooks or his Epigons or whatever, people that were, you know, following that mold at the time. And so that half of the song, no, I don't think anybody has heard or will hear, you know, they're on, you know, on commercial band demos and they're I don't think they've been recorded by anybody. That part was a failure. But the other half, I just wrote for myself, and I tried to write songs that either were irrelevant to that topic or were some kind of a compromise. Like, I wrote a song, just for instance, called Tears Only Run One Way that, to me, was a hooky song. It was kind of a shuffle beat song that was a little bit retro, but also could conceivably be recorded by somebody like the Mavericks or George Dukas or one of these guys from when I was doing it in the 90s that were doing sort of more traditional sounds. And so there's a large number of songs that I wrote like that, that I would try out and, you know, in performance myself that fit my own voice. And some of which I ended up recording on my own records. So I try to make that opportunity work for me and piggybacking this other idea of quality that I had personally onto the job.
Here's a live performance recorded last June in a horse barn in Charleston, Illinois, and available for download from archive.org of Tears Only Run One Way. Down, down, down.
Like, your first album, Country Love Songs, came out in 96. What was behind starting off as a solo performer as opposed to, like, starting a band or something?
I don't know. I had fronted bands several times before that. You know, at some point in one of the bands, now that I'm remembering it, somebody said, let's not have a stupid band name. Let's just have it be your name because they said to me, because you write the music, you sing the music. Why not have it be your name, which was kind of an alien concept at the time. But I think I think that idea kind of took. I mean, if you're the guy writing the songs and singing them, I mean, you call it Dire Straits or Mark Knopfler. It seems like it's a little bit of a distraction to have a name for it, you know, Dire Straits.
I hear some people think you sell more T-shirts if it has a cool name rather than your given name.
That could be. You know, in a way, it was kind of an outside name because I'd always spelled my name. I'd been Rob for a long time, and I was Robbie when I was a kid, but with a Y. And so by calling it R-O-B-B-I-E, I thought I had this, like, removed persona. So in that way, it's kind of like an act name.
It seems that even though you have one foot solidly in country, you also clearly have a very wide-ranging appreciation for different kinds of music. Like, you've done an entire album of Michael Jackson covers. Do you find that you're getting inspiration from everything you listen to, or do you just kind of pick and choose?
That's interesting. I think probably stuff gets in there that, you know, if you just hear it, you don't sort of decide whether to be influenced or not.
Right.
I think probably everything that you hear goes into the mill or whatever. Mm. But that said, there's so much music that I really can't relate to and so much that I dislike. And it seems to me that, both what you said is true, both the idea that I don't really have borders in what I listen to, and I've really come to love, you know, 8 radically different forms of music. But at the same time, within each of those forms, it seems like 90% of it to me is like kind of junky or something or not of interest. And I'm not sitting in judgment over it, but it just hits me wrong. And also accords to the idea that naturally 90% of anything is going to be junk. Like,
right.
That seems true in the world.
Yeah.
But I love, I've loved the same kinds of music for a long time. I love jazz and some of rock, a lot of country, a lot of bluegrass, a lot of whatever is called folk that doesn't get caught under those other rubrics. And then a certain amount of, I don't know what you might call just avant-garde or experimental stuff, just kind of noisy or trancy or offbeat stuff. Yeah, those are my touchstones, I guess. Mm. And soul and rhythm and blues and gospel.
Yeah.
I forgot about all that.
Next, we'll hear a song from the misleadingly titled Odds and Ends compilation, The Very Best of Robbie Foulkes, called Roots Rock Weirdos.
The town was hard to stir in. The nightclubs all were closed. Only a washed-up cover band hitting the stage at Joe's. The guitar hit the first bar of Secret Agent Man. A door in the back blew open, and into the room they ran. Roots rock weirdos up from the underground. Starboard till you're a V3, any old fashioned sound. Roots rock weirdos out of their holes they come, dressed up like it's 1951. Well, they looked the band gear over, and they noted with delight the guitar amp was a bassman, and the bassman played upright. Then they looked round at each other, and they cried, we are the best, for we liked unpopular music, and just looked at the way we're dressed. Now, roots, rock, weirdos, slapping each other's backs, using hepcat language they thought made them sound black. Roots, rock, weirdos, he was slow to anger, but that barkeep found it hard just to watch the air grow toxic with smoke and self-regard. So he jumped up on a bar stool and he called out loud and clear, I don't know just what you weirdos want, but I don't want you in here. The room grew deathly silent.
Then up from the stinking ranks rose a homely social worker, bowling shirt marked Hank. And dropping the fake black diction, he said, "Since you inquired, let me take stock of what we roots rock and weirdos desire." Fishnets for every woman, lipstick as red as flame. For every man, a tattoo, a Chevy and a dumb nickname. Cigarettes in every shirt sleeve, black leather on every back. Fanzines in every bookstore, LPs in each record rack. Three chords in every pop song, four white guys in each band. A ruthless media empire to saturate this land. Then with our old country comrades and our brothers in neo swing, we'll reclaim music from the kids for our thoughts and cracker kings. Rock weirdos, Christ, they're everywhere. A little Doc Thomas in their hearts and Doc Pomade in their hair. Rock weirdos, out of their homes they come, dressed up like it's 1951.
I prefer your earlier work.
A lot of your songs have a lot of humor to them, and I found sometimes that people of a critical disposition tend not to take songs that are funny seriously, because they are lighthearted, but you seem to take a lot of care to make sure that the funny songs have strong melodies, strong performances, so that there's replay value after the joke.
Well, thank you.
After you get the joke.
Thanks. I hope that's true. I mean, comic writers that I admire include Michael Flanders and Tom Lehrer and, you know, Cole Porter for that matter, and guys that were geniuses and really kind of obliterated the distinction between a comic song and a song of value. You know, they're just good songs. But that said, I am increasingly sympathetic to the people that that have trouble with that thing that I do. I put on a record the other day of mine, which I never really do, but somebody, a guy in my band, was talking about these songs that he liked from old records that he said, "These are good songs, the ones we did long ago that we recorded, they're like great." And I thought, no, that's not true. And I put on the record, and I was really astonished by how much I was appalled by the personality within some of the humorous songs. So I'm kind of in agreement with some of the critics of some of that stuff. It is hard to... That stuff makes the loudest imprint when you hear it, when you hear like Roots Rock Weirdos or White Man's Bourbon or something. I mean, that stuff just by its nature makes a stronger imprint than something more subtle. And, you know, I've always done, I think most of what I've done has not been funny, you know, probably 2/3, 3/4 of it. But I understand why that stuff sticks out for people and why it sort of, you know, taints the whole endeavor a little bit. And I think it's a good idea to kind of stay away from it. I hate to disappoint anybody that likes it a lot. You know, I love to laugh more than the next guy, as much as most of them. But I think when somebody's buying a record and putting it on, that and they're open to a serious experience, that why not honor that, you know?
Yeah. I've talked to a couple of friends and said, I'm interviewing Robbie Foulkes. A few of them are really excited, but there are one or two who only know you from the song Fountains of Wayne Hotline.
I hung a shingle, country music for hire. No fans, no singles, 10 years later I'm tired. Now I've racked my brain and I've looked all around, but I can't find a way to freshen my sound. And now who do you call when you're down to one musical dime? Fountains of Wayne Hotline.
Fountains of Fountains of Wayne Hotline. Gerald speaking. How can I help you?
Oh, yeah, thanks. Hello. Yeah, I'm a country singer in a small Midwestern town, and I'm here in the studio today. Let me explain. We're working on a track, and we just did a verse. It was kind of broken down, and at this point, I'm not sure where to take it, where to
sir,
go from here.
Sir, calm down. We can help you. We can help you.
Okay.
What you need to do now is employ the radical dynamic shift.
The radical... Yes, what do you mean by that?
You know, full band entry, fortissimo, while maintaining consistent apparent volume on the vocal track.
Oh. Yeah, that's a great idea. Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure. We're always here.
It's such a drag to face another filthy stage.
I could do that kind of thing forever, Fountains of Wayne Hotline. I grew up on Mad Magazine and
right.
National Lampoon, and I loved that. And I loved the idea that, that you could do a multi-level thing that there's a point of reference in it about the hotline, the concept. There's another joke about that band and the way they put together songs and, you know, is it a formula or how does it get to be that consistent and that good? And it's the fact that the song sounds like them, kind of, that I sound like the singer. And then there's this other thing with these people that answer the hotline and a sort of storyline that runs through the song that develops a little bit with that.
Hotline, Department of Bridges and Infrastructure, Grant speaking.
Oh, yeah, hi there. I called a little while ago. I talked to a gentleman, I believe his name was Gerald, and he had...
Sir, we got about 7 Geralds here. You're talking to me now.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. The point is, I'm in the middle of the song. We're about 3 minutes in, and I'm not sure where to take it from here. We've done a couple of verses, and it's just kind of hit a wall.
Yeah, well, listen, tell me about your textural variation and harmonic palette that you have going so far.
Oh, of course. Well, 2 16-bar verses, the first one broken down, followed by a radical dynamic shift.
Oh, that, Gerald.
A slightly distorted melodic guitar solo, and chordally, let's see, a 1, a 5, a 4, with and without a subdominant 7, a 2, 2 minor, and briefly a 9th compound over the tonic.
Well, that 9th, is that telegraphed, or is that just gratuitous coloration?
A bit of both, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, let's hit the bridge. I'll tell you what you do. No new chords introduced.
Okay.
Get a split bar of 4 in there and push the 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll slather the holy hell out of the thing with a semi-ironic Beach Boys vocal pad. And then an asymmetrical backhand. There's your bridge.
Well, isn't that kind of a lot of information to put in with you?
Sir. I've been on this hotline for 15 years. You're going to have to trust me on this one.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'll give it a try. Thank you.
You got it, Chief.
Oh, yeah. Now we're getting big and full. Oh, yeah.
Try a wider interval.
Just like this. Oh, yeah.
More like, oh, yeah.
Check me out.
Hopefully it works on like 4 different mm-hmm. levels, and that's what gives it the replay value that you're talking about. And to me, that's what's the exciting thing to go for, not making a novelty song and not making a joke song, but making a multifaceted thing that is you can't quite pin down as one thing, you know. If it's a good song and it's a funny song, already that's kind of interesting. Like,
right.
How many things are that, you know?
Yeah, 2 things at once.
Yeah.
And this manages to be 4.
Next up is an excellent piece of power pop from Robbie's 1999 major label debut, Let's Kill Saturday Night, called She Must Think I Like Poetry.
For every emotion, she's got one she's hiding. She moves closer, as though to reveal her mind. And she dances like it'll rain inside me. Does she feel that strong? Do I love so blind?
Signed to a major label for one album in the late 90s. What was it like being part of that machine?
I was signed for six records by Geffen, and I delivered one, and the label was folded into another label called Interscope. Long, boring business story, I guess. But Interscope ended up dropping most of the acts that were signed by Geffen, including me. And this was all within a year of my having signed this contract, which took a lot of time to, I don't know, it was just a lot of effort. And in light of the amount of time that and output that came out of it, it was kind of wasted effort. But again, what was the question?
What did you learn from being on a major
label? What did I learn? Gee, you know, I would say I learned some negative lessons from that. I mean, I learned that I didn't enjoy the experience of an A&R guy, a lawyer, and a manager, and some other people calling me almost every day. And I'm sure they didn't mean this, but the result of being in constant contact with these people kind of really stressed me out. And I am less stressed out by running my own business and by booking my own gigs, booking my own hotel rooms, being a DIY guy, which I about 80% am now. I mean, I've got an agent and stuff, and I've got
people helping me out, but it's mostly kind of a one-man operation, I think, at this point, and it was before that. And I'm personally, psychologically and spiritually, more at ease and happier with that arrangement than I am with the idea that I'm helping to pull this big train and that people are trying to influence me to do things and won't always tell me exactly what they're thinking. And it was just hard for me to see through the fog of all that stuff. So there was that aspect of it. Yeah, it was a lot of cloudy information to me. It was like being besieged by information and none of it exactly accurate information is what I took away from it.
Okay.
I think it's a lot like working for a big company, whatever, whether it's IBM or Google or whatever the big company is. I mean, if the idea is it's a kind of a partnership where your creations, your songs or whatever, the thing, you know, or it's trying to like be a director in Hollywood or something, and you're trying to do work that's valuable and creative and quality, but in some ways it's being influenced and directed and managed by a bunch of other people that you're working with in the same organization, and you're trying to be cooperative and you're trying to please them, but you're also trying to do this other thing. It's I found it awfully hard to game, you know, and I just don't think that I had the mentality for it.
From 2007's Revenge, a superb live double album split between electric and acoustic sets, here's a rousing rendition of a song that really deserved to be a big hit, Let's Kill Saturday Night.
Well, a dollar I make is a buck I owe, and a 40-hour week leaves 10 to blow. But every game in this town is just nickel and dime, and when the sun goes down, feels like the last time. Down the main drag we ride with the engine silver. There's a fire inside, that's the one thing going. I got the Mustang loaded, I got her on to ride, I got a little red bullet. Let's kill Saturday night, knock it out of its misery.
Interesting projects that you've done in this DIY field is the album 50 Voice Doberman, which is 50 songs that are released only on your website. Mm-hmm. Just reading through the liner notes and seeing how many different styles you tried on it, Or are we going to see something more in that vein in the future?
Definitely, yeah. I'm just starting to work on a 49 voice Doberman or something like that. I think the value to me of doing that was that, you know, I just set my own deadlines, made myself write a bunch of songs, 50 in a year, which is not a crazy amount. It's what you would do for the Nashville publishing arrangement that we were talking about. But all to sort of vent creatively and then to take a look at what you had done over the 50 songs and after you'd recorded, you know, just recording stuff is valuable practice because, people often ask me, why aren't the records as good as the performances, people will often say. And I think there's a very simple answer to that, assuming that it's true. I mean, I'm not sure. I think it's probably true. But that is that I perform 150 times a year. I've made 12 records, you know. So it's hard to get experience at recording that, like, gets you up to speed. So writing a lot in a year is good practice. Recording a lot in a year is good practice, you know, whether there's a call for it or not, a demand for it. And then also, after I'd done those 50 songs, I looked at them and thought, what is the best, you know? And that was one essential piece that got me to what we started talking about in the beginning, which is this sort of new thing that I'm doing now, was I sort of observed at the end of that these folky, simpler acoustic things were what were really tripping my trigger the most. So it's a good exercise, and I'm looking forward to doing it again to, replenish the catalog and keep myself in shape.
From 2008's 50 Voice Doberman, still available at robbiefolks.com, here's a song about Pluto's demotion from planet to dwarf planet, simply titled Pluto.
Lonely, you a minor planet, minor me a lonely man, spinning in celestial orbit, brother trans-Neptunian, dwarf they label you, me, I beg to disagree. King of the Kuiper Belt, spear of noble mystery. Late you came unto us, born on a solar wind. Charon, a moon, your equal, Nixon, Ida, distant twins. Since the second grade, 9 is the number I recall. Without you, my friend, our solar system feels small. So sad to see you go. I won't forget you, Pluto. Enough to spherify you, not to clear the neighborhood. In all the Milky Way, is there nowhere you belong? Drifting in empty space, lost and lonely as a song.
Maybe you never really were one of us. Eccentric, they said, too far out. Just a chunk of rock and ice. Well, I guess it's time to give you a number and send you on your way. Oh, but some of us will never forget.
So sad to see you go. I won't forget you, Pluto.
One of the interviews I did a couple of months ago was with John Langford, and he said that you were doing some stuff with the Mekons coming up.
Yeah.
What can you say about that?
We're just traveling across the UK.
Okay.
And it's an adventure, and I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm learning a bunch of their songs, and I'll be doing some of mine with their set as well in August. And, we've been friends a long time, me and John and Sally. And so it's the first time that we've ever, you know, traveled or worked in this way together. But, you know, who can say no to that? That sounds like great fun. Would you say no?
I wouldn't say no.
Yeah. I mean, no matter what it paid, which it turns out is next to nothing, I still wouldn't say no.
Well, that's handy. The schedule just came out for the American Music Festival at Fitzgerald's. They've put the Dyes at 7:45 and Robbie Foulkes on the main stage at 8.
Oh, boy. That's
so we'll put
kismet.
All of our really great songs in the first 15 minutes before the grand exodus happens.
I don't know about that. We'll see about that. I'm sure you can keep them with trickery and good
chicanery.
Tones. Chicanery. Yeah.
Well, I think that's all the questions I've got. Do you have any words of wisdom to leave us with?
Stay away from the key of F sharp. It seems to be hard, yeah. Or get a capo, one or the other.
Well, that's good enough for me. Thanks, Robbie.
Thanks, Charlie. It was a pleasure.
And that's just about all the time we have for this week. Thanks for listening. And if you're in the Chicagoland area on the 4th of July, come out to the 33rd Annual American Music Festival at Fitzgerald's in Berwyn and see Robbie play in celebration of Bloodshot Records' 20th anniversary. For more information on his upcoming shows, check out robbiefoulkes.com, which also has one of the most consistently entertaining blogs by a musician online. And be sure to tune in again next week when we'll be talking to our July Artists of the Month, Wussy. But before we go, we'll leave you with a lovely song from Robbie's 2001 album, Couples in Trouble, called Never Could. This is Charlie, signing off.
You've been hurt by love, and now you hate the world. The night yields to dawn, now your dreams are all gone, and you've got to go on without that girl. It never could, it never would, it never can, it never will. Cause it's got the whole world moving while your feet are standing still. It's got you staring into space, it's knocked a smile right off your face. Nothing's taken the place of a sweet thrill. No, nothing ever could or ever will. She's hit you and run. It never could, it never would, it never can, it never will. Cause it's got the whole world moving while your feet are standing still. It's got you staring into space, it's knocked a smile right off your face. Nothing's taken the place of a sweet thrill. No, nothing ever could or ever will. Apart, but it can mend the heart she let die. It never could, it never would, it never can, it never will. Cause it's got the whole world moving while your feet are standing still. It's got you staring into space, it's knocked a smile right off your face. Nothing's taken the place of love's sweet thrill. Nothing's gonna fill the space she used to fill. Oh, nothing ever could or ever will.